Good afternoon, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely, Justice Jacobs. May it please the Court, Kathy Miller on behalf of the appellant David Miller. With me is my colleague Kelly Green. I would like to request to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honor, there's no real dispute about the applicable law. There are a few points we're plating and we believe had the law wrong, and we've cited that in our briefs. So what it comes down to is reading this bylaw, and if there is a way to read it to give meaning to the word shall and unless. And we believe that we have provided that reading, and we believe that Palladium has not. But if Your Honors reject our argument, the contract, the bylaw would be ambiguous, and the ambiguity should be construed against Palladium. Section 1 of the bylaw provides that the right to indemnification shall include the right to be paid expenses in advance. As does Section 5, it says expenses shall be paid by the corporation in advance. Shall is mandatory. Shall means shall. And in the context of an advancement, when there is a mandatory advancement, the board of directors, the opportunity of the board of directors to make a credit decision on that request is taken away from them.
Well, in the absence of the board making a decision or deciding to address this, ordinarily the bill would go in and the CFO would pay it. Is that how it's contemplated? It would operate under the shall? It just goes to the CFO and gets paid?
The right to...
That in practice, if
without the
someone
unless,
wants advancement, they send the bill to the CFO. The CFO pays it because he hasn't been, or she hasn't been, countermanded by the board.
The board, under these bylaws, the board then has the right and has the duty to make sure that the applicant is qualified.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Must the board address every advancement request?
We believe they do under the way Palladium has construed these bylaws.
Why does the board have to address it?
Because the shall makes it mandatory that you have the right. There are still certain boxes to check to complete that right. For example, you have to give an undertaking. That's required by the statute. That's required by the bylaw. So the board would have to ensure that the improper undertaking is given.
Well, couldn't the bylaw be interpreted to mean that the board has the power to address each advancement request, but it doesn't have to. And if it doesn't have to, that is, if it doesn't, and in 30 days there's no response from the board, plus for or against advancement, then advancement becomes mandatory.
We believe that's not a correct reading of the bylaw, Your Honor, because when a board is presented with a request for advancement, the board has to exercise its business judgment to determine whether or not the extension of credit is in the best interest of the company. So there.
Well, not every. That doesn't work in every case that way. If we're talking about extensions of credit, in most corporations, that never gets to the board level. Maybe the CFO can take a look at that. Maybe the comptroller, the treasurer, depending on how large the company is.
Well, the board has to make the determination of whether or not under permissive advancement, whether or not in these circumstances it is in the best interest of the company to grant advancement. And the grant of advancement is an extension of credit, and that is a board-level decision.
And if it isn't permissive, if it's mandatory, what then?
And the board doesn't get to, it loses the opportunity to make the determination in that instance of the extension of credit. The right to advancement exists. It is mandatory. The board, when they adopted a bylaw or entered a contract, made a determination.
It plays no role. It's deliberately taken itself out of the picture.
That is correct, Your Honor. They've made a determination. They want advancement rights to be mandatory, and the public policy for that, it makes sense. You want qualified people to ensure they know what rights they have. They want to be able to defend what they believe to be frivolous, meritless claims, and they want to be sure that if a claim is brought against them, that they will have that advancement right provided to them.
I'm
I must be missing something here. Is there a distinction between indemnification rights and advancement rights?
Under these bylaws?
Yes.
There's a difference.
And let me play it out, at least as I'm reading it for the moment. Section 1 says, unqualified, you shall be indemnified, right? To the
yes.
fullest extent permitted by law. Fine. At the bottom, it may not be the bottom, but on the page I'm reading it, it then says, right to indemnification is a contract right, and subject to sections 2 and 5 shall include the right to be paid in advance, right?
Yes.
So you've got shall be indemnified, but paid in advance subject to provisions 2 and 5, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so then you get to section 2, and it talks about the process of requesting it and whether the board denies it or not. And section 5, which at least seems to me to say, even though you've got the right, the absolute right to indemnification, you don't necessarily have an unqualified right to advancement, and that advancement is going to be decided by the board of directors, and it may be decided in your favor if you're able to provide an undertaking or collateral or whatever in case ultimately indemnification is not appropriate. So why isn't that the way this breaks down, that we're not talking about you shall be indemnified, but then later they say you can't be indemnified. It's you shall be indemnified, but you don't get advancement as an unqualified right.
Right. It may be the different schemes of indemnification and advancement. There are certain times where you have the absolute right to indemnification if you are successful in the underlying action and there is no determination of the board. There are times when a board may have to make a determination if you are unsuccessful in the litigation whether or not you meet the criteria of the statute, and that is addressed in Section 2. In Section 5, the problem with the reading of the bylaw that way is it makes the shall meaningless. And in 1...
Well, what shall is being made meaningless?
Shall be paid in advance. Because shall is mandatory. And we're not saying that it cannot be
unless,
limited.
Unless otherwise determined by the board of directors.
So that makes it permissive.
And as to advancement, right.
And that's so why would the board use shall when they adopted this bylaw? Why does this bylaw say twice, you shall have the right? There would be no reason.
But a lot of times contracts are written up where it says this contractor shall provide 17 reams of paper unless something else happens. And then, you know, you won't be supplying 17 reams of paper.
Right.
You know, it starts out with what you shall do and then provides a condition under which you don't do it.
And that's it. And we are not taking the position that a mandatory right to advancement cannot then be narrowed or limited by a shall or an exception. There are many bylaws that say shall have the right to advancement except if you are the plaintiff in the litigation. Clearly that is a...
Okay, but isn't this the same kind of thing? You shall be paid in advance unless otherwise determined by the board of directors in a specific case.
I said no for two reasons, Your Honor. One, shall have the right. And then what Palladium is saying is, and what the lower court said, it's mandatory to that point. And then you get to the board of directors, and the board of directors is making it their determination. And they have to make the determination. Palladium's trying to argue, well, we just do nothing and it turns into mandatory, and we submit that that is a breach of their duty. They have the obligation under that circumstance to make the determination. So there is no narrowing or any possibility that they do not have their full ability to analyze the request. There is no limit on that, just as in permissive. So in every circumstance, they are going under the bylaws the way they've read it. The board of directors is going to have to make that determination.
What determination? Indemnification or advancement?
Advancement. Whether or not it is in the best interest of the company. That same analysis would apply then to an employee where the bylaws say that an employee may receive advancement.
That, let me stop you there. These bylaws do say that, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you agree, I mean, there's no dispute that that is permissive advancement.
I agree, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. If we were to assume that the bylaw in this case had different language, that is, also said that the board or the company may advance indemnification to directors, you would not contest the proposition that that is permissive?
If the bylaw provided that?
Use the word may.
May instead of shall.
Yes.
In the two places where I agree, Your Honor.
Okay.
That would be permissive.
So instead of using the word may, what we have here is a bylaw that says shall advance, pay in advance, unless the board determines otherwise. Why doesn't that have the same substantive meaning as may?
Two reasons, Your Honor. One, the exception or the condition in that circumstance swallows the grant. There never is anything mandatory about shall. If you're going to use the word shall,
yeah, but it does. It doesn't swallow the right if the board decides not to act.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear.
The board decides to not to act, not to take any position, then the shall provision governs, and it then becomes mandatory. I think, at least in this case, after 30 days from the date of the demand.
So that could arise in two circumstances. One, the board of directors never discuss it, never meet, and just lapse. We submit that's a breach of their duty. Or they have to meet and discuss, and Palladium actually now says, well, we can meet, and we can determine it's in the best interest, and decide not to deny it. Your Honor, I submit that that is the same as an employee making a permissive request is form over substance. Deciding not to deny is the same analysis as deciding to grant.
Well, it may be awkward form, maybe awkward substance, but that doesn't necessarily, it doesn't follow from that the word shall has to carry all of the baggage that you're arguing for. That is, it may just be an inartful way of saying may pay advancement.
And I submit, Your Honor, it could be, but when you look at the bylaws together and where the company intentionally used the word may when they meant permissive for employees, that suggests that it was intended to grant a broader right and not the same right. And the bylaws in Section 1 say under indemnification, the board is expressing its intent, the company, to the fullest extent permitted by law for indemnification, and that right shall include advancement right. And the broadest possible right they can give in advancement is mandatory. So we think when you look at it all together, and again, this is being read by a reasonable third party, the directors and officers are making a decision about whether to work for this company, they want to be certain on what kind of rights they have.
The other side, I think, would argue that you're investing, your side is investing some talismanic significance to the word shall. If the and here's my question. It's clear, I think, that if the bylaw used the word may, that everybody would understand that that's permissive. The board would then have to act one way or the other.
I agree with that, Your Honor.
But by using the word shall, that simple analysis cannot be employed. That is, even if the word shall is followed by a clause that said except where the board determines otherwise. My question is, when you have that coupling, what is the analysis that the court is expected to engage in? You know, what does the law require?
To give meaning to all the words where possible. And so the reading of the bylaw has to give meaning to shall, and it has to give meaning to the word unless. And we submit that the lower court's ruling in Palladium's position gives no meaning to the word shall, because under other circumstances, it is always permissive. And when you have the...
So you're saying we need to give no meaning to the unless clause?
No, Your Honor. We propose a reading of the bylaw that the unless is still reserving, letting the
director know that the board has still duties to make sure that you are qualified. Those policing powers, as we were discussed in Stockman.
That's where the policing function comes in.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that reads into the unless cause language that's not there.
When you read it as a whole, we believe that it is a reasonable reading because under Section 3 and 4, there are other methods by which the advancements could be paid that the board can look at. If there is no way to read the bylaw to give meaning to the shall and the unless, then it's ambiguous and it should be construed against the company.
I see that you're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Kenneth Berman and I represent Palladium. The issue here is whether the Palladium bylaw gives the Board of Directors discretion to deny a request for advancement in a specific case. The lower court ruled that it did in a well-reasoned decision that we submit should be affirmed. The proper construction of the bylaw is the one that would be understood by an objective, reasonable third party. If the document is clear, the words are given their clear and literal or plain and ordinary meaning. The question, therefore, is what would an objective, reasonable third party understand by the words that expenses shall be advanced, quote, unless otherwise determined by the Board of Directors in a specific case?
And your answer to that question is a reasonable detached observer would read that as permissive advancement.
That's correct. If they were reading the document as a whole and reading Section 2, they would see that the board has 30 days in order to make this decision, and if it doesn't make the decision within 30 days, then the applicant, the person who's requesting advancement, is entitled to the advancement.
Clearly, however, the drafter of the bylaws at issue here knew how to use the word may, that is, how to use the word may to convey the meaning of permissive advancement when they wanted to do it. They did it for the category of officers. Why then would the drafters choose what appears to be a very awkward formulation to get to the same result or bottom line when they could have just simply treated officers and directors the same way?
They did use the word may in connection with employees. And there is more than one way to skin a cat. But what they did here is they created two different paradigms, one paradigm for the officers and directors and a separate paradigm for the employees. With respect to the officers and directors, the paradigm is this. There was a balance, essentially, that was struck, the balance between giving the corporation the opportunity to have a first look at a request for advancement, giving the board that opportunity, and if the board felt in its discretion that advancement would not be in the best interest of the corporation, it would have an opportunity to deny that, to deny the advancement request. But it would have to do it within the period prescribed by Section 2, because if it didn't act within the period described by Section 2, then the request ripens into a right to advancement. So for the officers and directors, there is a... they can make a request, and they know within a relatively short period of time whether advancement will be granted or it won't be granted.
Is that in the case of both officers and directors, the 30-day window?
Yes. But with respect to the employees never know because there's no time limit with respect to the employees. The employees can put in a request, and if the board never acts, they are never entitled to anything. They don't know in 30 days what the status is.
I may have been confused. I lumped officers together with employees and treated directors as a separate category. Is that a misreading?
I believe that is a misreading. The officers and directors are treated alike, and the employees and agents are treated
So we're talking about below officer-level employees.
That's correct.
All right.
That's right.
Would another way of putting it, at least so that I can understand it better, be that there are essentially three levels here? There's the absolute right, the shall, to advancement. There's the may, which gives you no rights, really, as an employee, but gives you the possibility. And then in between the two, there's the shall with a wrinkle, which is shall unless the board decides otherwise. so that it's kind of stepwise. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Well, those are the three possibilities, with the exception that in this particular bylaw, there is no set of circumstance where somebody has a mandatory right to advancement. They have a qualified or conditional right to advancement, as described in Section 5. There is no population, no stakeholder, for example, who escapes Section 5.
Right. Officers and directors then are treated differently in the sense that their eligibility for advancement ripens into a mandatory right if no action, no contrary action is taken in 30 days?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, whereas in the case of sub-officer level employees, the board has to act in all cases and can do it at any time, is not limited by a 30-day window?
Or not at all, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they don't have to act. It's a matter of board of director grace if an employee or an agent gets advancement. But the board is under no compunction whatsoever to act. There's no consequence to the corporation if the board doesn't act when an employee or an agent makes a request for advancement.
Well, why doesn't this construction then change the word shall to may under the guise of interpretation?
Because in the very same sentence it uses the word unless. So the shall means shall, and unless means unless. So very often this construction is used when you want to create a default condition, the default condition described by the shall, and the unless creates the exception to the default condition. So if the conditions that are described in the unless clause come to be, then that's what governs and the default provision doesn't govern. So, for example, Rule 16F of this court says that the parties shall have a total of 20 minutes to argue each side of an appeal unless otherwise ordered by the court. Now, you can't say that I have a discretionary right, I can only argue for so much as the court gives me, because if the court doesn't otherwise order me, then I have 20 minutes. But the court always has the power to say, no, you don't have 20 minutes. We're not giving you 20 minutes in this case. It's that sort of language that the board used in this case. And if the board had set out to create the very paradigm that I submit to you exists here, this would have been an eminently logical and reasonable way to do it, where they're balancing the interests of the corporation and the interests of the officer and director, somebody who wants advancement and the corporation which wants a first look.
Eminently logical or one logical way?
It's one logical way to do it. There may be other ways to do it. But you look at this, and this certainly is a logical way to establish this paradigm. Now, Mr. Miller's interpretation would make the unless clause surplusage. He's assigning the meaning to the unless clause as being that the board of directors only has the right to exercise its police power to determine whether the person who's requesting advancement is a qualified recipient of advancement. But you don't need the unless clause to do that, because the board already has that power. The corporation has that power. If a person doesn't qualify, the request would be denied with or without the unless clause. And if the unqualified person brought a lawsuit to obtain advancement, the person would lose because the person didn't qualify. So the board doesn't need the unless clause to support the denial of an advancement request from an unqualified person. Mr. Miller's interpretation also makes the words subject to Section 5, which appear in Section 1, surplusage. Because if the right to advancement were mandatory, as Mr. Miller argues, the word subject to Section 5 would have no meaning. The fact that Section 1 is expressly made subject to Section 5 shows to an objective, reasonable third-party reader that something other than mandatory advancement was being provided. Section 5 becomes paramount to Section 1. So we thus need to look to Section 5 to see what rights an officer or director has or doesn't have. And Section 5 states the board has the power to make a contrary determination.
So just to make sure I understand your side's position, Mr. Miller is arguing that the interpretation accepted by the court basically deprives the word shall of any meaning.
That's what Mr. Miller is arguing.
Right. Your response is no. Actually, our side's interpretation doesn't deprive shall of any meaning. Shall is a default mandatory rule. Unless there are certain set of defined circumstances occurs.
That's correct. If the board had intended to craft a bylaw that provided for mandatory advancement, it would not, we submit, have used the subject to and unless clauses. There would have been no need for those clauses. The bylaw would have simply read the same as all other mandatory advancement bylaws adopted by those Delaware corporations that provide for mandatory advancement. Mr. Miller offers no reason why a bylaw would limit the discretion of a board of directors without actually saying so. He says the board of directors' discretion is limited just to determining whether the person who requests it is qualified. Mr. Miller also doesn't say why the board in adopting this bylaw would choose to limit its own power by silence. Nor does Mr. Miller offer a reason why, under his construction, the unless clause is granting what he calls policing powers to the board of directors, which is a board that operates by majority vote, that enjoys wide discretion under the business judgment rule, and whose mission is to do what's in the best interest of the corporation. You don't need to convene a board of directors meeting or take a board of directors vote to determine if an undertaking has been provided or if the person requesting advancement is or was an officer or director who's eligible to apply for advancement. To adopt Mr. Miller's interpretation not only makes the unless clause surplusage and invalidates the subject to clause, but it requires judicial rewriting of the bylaw to import words that don't appear anywhere in the bylaw, specifically words limiting the role of the board of directors in this process to ministerial policing powers. So their interpretation violates two cardinal rules of contractual interpretation. One is it renders language surplusage, and the other is it requires the court to import words into the bylaw that aren't there. Mr. Miller asks, if permissive advancement was intended, why didn't the board use the same language for the officers and directors as it did for the employees, who clearly get advancement only if the board of directors approved? And that's the two different paradigms that I explained earlier.
And under your paradigm, the advancement right of directors and officers, I guess, is the corporate law equivalent of a springing use, as that term was used in feudal land law.
I'm afraid Your Honor has me at a disadvantage. I studied springing uses about 35 years ago, and I don't think I've returned to them since.
Yeah, that covers my knowledge of it as well. But it's something that ripens into a right in the future, but isn't an enforceable right at the time it's at least at the beginning of the process.
That's correct. That's correct. And
perhaps
in fact,
is it a defeasible fee then?
I'm not exactly sure. But this bylaw chooses words that the legislature had used in 1983 when it referred to boards acting in a specific case at a time when there was no advancement except as determined by the board in the specific case. I submit that when the drafter of this bylaw chose to use those same words, giving the board discretion in the specific case, there was already a body of case law and a context under which those words were used, namely to imply that or to make clear that the board didn't have to grant advancement in every case.
Well, when I read that little factoid in your brief, I was fascinated by it, but I'm not sure exactly how it applies to the analysis here. That is that the statute contained a phrase which somehow found its way into these bylaws.
The reason that it applies is because if somebody is reading that language, which says unless otherwise determined by the board in a specific case, they wouldn't assume that they had a right to advancement in every case. And that's the language that the legislature used when it wanted to give the board discretion to make a case-by-case determination, and it's the very same language that's used here to allow the board to make a case-by-case determination. I would like to touch just briefly on one aspect about policy, because this is raised in Mr. Miller's brief. Mr. Miller says that there's a public policy supporting the granting of advancement in order to attract qualified directors and officers, and that this policy should result in choosing his construction. First of all, we don't get to the policy issue unless there's an ambiguity or unless there is a reasonable interpretation that's offered by Mr. Miller, and I submit that none has. But there's also a more important public policy at stake here, and that's the policy of responsible corporate governance, the policy that directors should be motivated and conduct themselves by what's in the best interest of the corporation and its shareholders. The policy supporting advancement is not a one-size-fits-all policy. Advancement is not necessarily in the best interest of every Delaware corporation. Not all corporations are the same. They have different financial conditions. Some are big, some are small, some are startups, some are matured companies, some are dynamic, and some do the same things day in and day out. Mandatory advancement may be wise for some companies, but not for others. This is why the legislature did not mandate advancement in every case, but left it to each corporation to decide for itself the circumstances under which it would provide advancement. Those companies that felt it to their advantage to provide for mandatory advancement in every case could do that with a bylaw that actually specifically says that, and many corporations do, and Palladium did not. Those that wanted to handle advancement requests differently could do so, and Palladium decided that it would do so. But the policy of responsible corporate governance applies to every Delaware corporation across the board. All Delaware corporations should be governed responsibly. In this instance, the bylaw provision at issue is fully consistent with a policy of responsible corporate governance, giving the board the opportunity to decide in specific cases whether to provide advancement. How many instances have we seen in the case law where a director or officer had a right to mandatory advancement, even though the payment of advancement in the specific case was not in the best interest of the company? This bylaw wisely gives the board the power to make a determination in a specific case. It's a determination, not just simply does the person qualify. They make a determination within a reasonable time after the request whether the company's best interest would be served by providing advancement.
So it's a model bylaw in your view?
I think that it certainly embraces a model paradigm. Yes, Your Honor, I do. With the added requirement that
imminent, I think, was the word he used.
I'm sorry?
I think he used the word imminent.
Imminent?
Yes.
Oh, did I say imminent? The paradigm that's embraced in this bylaw, I think, is a model paradigm. I think that if a company were to decide to do this, it would be the best of both worlds. It would create an opportunity for an officer and director to get advancement, but it would also create an opportunity for the board to decide in a specific case whether in that case it was appropriate.
But there are other forms of wording that could have been used to achieve the same result. Would you agree?
I would agree with that, yes. Because the English language is very versatile, and there's more than one way to express the same thought. The lower court's decision was not only faithful to the plain and ordinary meaning of this unambiguous bylaw, but was consistent with the public policy favoring responsible corporate governance, and it should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Addressing first the conditional right, the reasons we've discussed, it is not a conditional right. It's either you shall have it subject to a condition that can be satisfied, but here the condition swallows the right. There is nothing mandatory about it. There is no point when this bylaw is mandatory subject to some condition. And the suggestion that this model for directors and officers of the 30 days, Your Honors, I submit that the company would not have created two separate schemes for employees and for officers and directors under a shall and a may merely for a 30-day time period. The board must act in both case, in both circumstances, and make the same decision, and therefore there is no difference. And if you read the shall and the may, excuse me, the shall and the unless as may, then there is no distinction between directors and officers and employees. And reading the Section 5 as we do does not render it surplusage. As the statute requires, an undertaking is required. So a director reading 1 says, I have the right to look at 5 and see what else I might have to do. I have to give them an undertaking. It is not surplusage. And then briefly on the point about the going back to the prior statute, I believe Palladium got that from a case from advanced mining, because at the time that particular bylaw was adopted, the statute had certain language in it, and there the court said, well, it wouldn't have been reasonable for the director to have a different understanding because the current
statute at the time provided that it was permissible.
So the takeaway from your position, I gather, is that if you want to draft permissive advancement bylaw, never use the word shall.
Well, if it's purely permissive, it's correct. But if you can do it limited, and we don't argue otherwise. It can be mandatory in certain circumstances, and then the board or the company narrows the scope with the unless or provided that. But that's not what we have here. There's no narrowing. It's taking it away, and that's the difference, we believe. And the language of that found its way into the bylaw, they tried to get a hook into the prior statute. Why would a board go back to a statute 16 years, was revised 16 years before this was adopted to make it permissive? The statute at the time this bylaw was adopted is permissive. That's all they would have had to do. And finally, on the policy, it is a public policy to in favor of advancement, and for the reason of you want people to make a decision up front.
Did this policy have anything to do with the analysis here?
It's
a question that's fairly asked of both sides, and I should have asked it before.
Yes, sir, I believe it does, because the way this is read is an objective third party. And when you're looking at an objective third party, a director or an officer, reading these bylaws would understand what the policy and the reason for having advancement. And when you have it in that context, and you're reading shall, and you look at an employee has may, then the director will have the reasonable understanding that it is a mandatory right. And you want that up front. You want them to know with certainty what rights they have. And that's why it's important to have, if it's, be clear and have the mandatory advancement. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We appreciate the arguments of both sides. We'll take the matter under advisement, and we will adjourn.